And now, our feature presentation. Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man 5, Cheyenne Challenge. Narrated by Mort Shelby, with performances by Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Lynette Savard, Ken Jackson, David Coyne, Colleen Delaney, Tim Carlin, M.B. Van Dorn, Christopher Graybill, Johann Detweiler, Dan Smith, Chris Rowan, Dylan Lynch, Sonny Lasky, James Konacek, Andy Clements, Eric Messner, Elliot Dash, James Lewis, and Michael John Casey. Nothing much moves in the high lonesome when old man winter holds the land in his frigid grasp. The mountain man, known simply as Preacher, settled in at the cabin of an old friend in a steep-walled valley that shielded it from the violent blasts of Canadian northers. He hunted for meat, smoked and jerked it, gathered other provisions, and watched the sky for signs of snow. When the white powder lay hip high, he had enough wood split and stacked to last the winter. By the time it grew belly high on a 17-hand horse, he had every small crack chink, the chimney brush clean, and a neat little corral set up with a four-sided shelter backed against one stern granite wall. Heavy yield in that winter of 1840 and 41 soon brought the snow level to a roof ridge height. Preacher had to tunnel out to the livestock. He kept the corral clear by some energetic body-warming shoveling. Through it all, his cuts, scrapes, and bullet wounds healed. Altogether, Preacher reckoned, when the buds began to swell on the willows, the cabin had been snug enough, nearly warm enough, and he had been almost amply fed. Lean and fit, although a little gaunt from his limited diet, Preacher began to itch to move along. He figured it was getting on toward late March, and his only complaint came from a rheumatic knee that resulted from too many hours in cold streams tending his traps in days gone by.
Yep, time to look for new places.
The sun felt warm on Preacher's back as he breathed in the heady, leathery aroma of freshly saddle-soaked tack. He looked up from tightening the last rope that secured the load on his pack saddle. His mood collapsed as he sensed the presence of another person. Thunder, his spotted rump Appaloosa stud, had become aware of the intrusion too. Preacher stepped away from the pack horse and walked back towards the log dwelling. His right hand rested on the butt of one awesome four-barrel pistol. Preacher tensed slightly. One did not survive more than 20 years in the wilds without being constantly alert. So, Preacher had the big four-shooter halfway out from behind the broad red sash at his waist when he rounded the cabin.
You the mountain man named Preacher?
Preacher took in the long, narrow head, oversized nose, and small, deep-set black eyes. Buck teeth and slick back ebony hair completed the likeness to a weasel. In fact, though Preacher didn't know it, the man before him went by the handle Weasel Carter.
I am.
Preacher cut his eyes for a careful glance around the tree line. There was some furtive movement among the aspen saplings and underbrush. His alarm system instantly primed Preacher for whatever might happen next. Weasel Carter forced a fleeting, sickly, lipless smile, removed his hat, and mopped his brow with a grimy kerchief. A fraction of a second later, Preacher's keen eyesight picked out a thin spurt of smoke from the priming pan of a flintlock rifle just past the tree line. Before Weasel could react, Preacher lashed out with his free hand and yanked his betrayer in front of himself. Weasel took the bullets intended for Preacher. A
A second later, three men rushed out of the concealment of the trees. Preacher figured he'd gotten about as much use as he was going to get out of Weasel at that point. The man was starting to resemble Swiss cheese.
Thanks. Couldn't have done it without you.
Preacher threw the obviously dead Weasel to the side. He aimed his pistol at the would-be assassins. Preacher worked a complicated action, lining up another barrel. Preacher blew away the left side of the head of the last killer trash. The flattened ball left a glittering brown eye dangling on a sallow, hollow cheek. Bleeding horribly, the thug managed to draw a pistol from his waistband. Preacher switched to the other fully charged four-barrel pistol.
I didn't ask for this! But I ain't disinclined to join the dance to someone else's tune.
Shit, it hurts.
Preacher crossed to the fallen ambusher.
You ain't got long. Speak.
That's a fact. You done got me through the liver.
Yeah, well, good riddance to trash like you, I say.
Preacher knelt beside the dying man.
You gonna just leave me out here? Ain't gonna give me no Christian burial?
Weren't no Christian thing what you done, sending that weasel face punk in to set me up.
Oh, jeez. You really are, preacher.
Who sent you five after me?
I'm thirsty.
I don't care. You'll be dead in a minute. You think that gut shot is a bad way to go? You ain't felt pain yet. Now, who sent you?
Ezra Pease.
God. Damn Ezra Pease, I knew that man were no good first time I laid eyes on him. I knew he was crooked, I knew he cheated the Injuns and the whites alike, and he sold guns and whiskey to the Injuns, too. That finally riled me enough I beat the hell out of him and run him out of the High Lonesome. But I never figured him for a coward that hired someone else to do his killing for him.
Ain't no coward in Ez.
Yeah, that depends on whether or not you're on the receiving end. Where can I find him?
Ain't telling you that, preacher.
Then you'll take it to hell with you.
I'll see you there.
Maybe, maybe not.
Preacher dragged the four corpses to a deep wash, rolled them down to the bottom, and collapsed a wide section of dirt and rocks from the lip on top of them. That would at least keep the critters away. He gathered up their weapons and located their horses. These he freed from bridle and saddle and sent them off on their own.
Time to get going, Thunder. Shit. So Ezra Pease is back.
It had all begun some 10 years ago at Rendezvous. Preacher rode into the wide, gentle valley that housed Rendezvous for those in the fur trade that year.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, Preacher. New trader in camp. I'll point him out. Like to see what you make of the cut of him.
Right then, Preacher suspected there might be something not quite right about the man. Jim Bridger didn't often take to the judgments of other men, unless he thought himself a mite too harsh on his own. Not that Bridger was given to an overwhelming flow of the milk of human kindness, understand. All the same, Preacher rambled on into the growing gathering of white canvas tents, buffalo hide teepees, brush lean-tos, and other mobile dwellings of the hard, adventurous men who worked the mountains for the valuable furs that fed a hungry eastern market. Preacher spotted a prime little piece of land that would make a right nice place to lay his head for a while. After tending to his horse, Preacher began to unpack all his personals. He never got past a bottle of rye.
You Indian son of a bitch! I'll kill you, you bastard!
Always in the mood for a good fight, Preacher couldn't help but try and get a better look. He elbowed his way between Slippery Jim and Broken Jaw Sloan to get a better view. The new trader, with the help of a pair of louts that turned out to be a swampers, was whipping up on the slender, youthful Nez Perce brave. The white man looked to be in his mid to late 30s, which put him a good 10 to 12 years older than Preacher at that time. While the louts held down the teenage Nez Perce, Factor smashed vicious, painful blows to the Indian's face.
You were gonna steal that knife. I saw you.
No. I give 2 hands sable skins. A poor pelt, you say? 2 hands sable skins for 1 knife. That too much, but I take.
The trader's watery blue eyes narrowed, and he sneered back at the bleeding engine.
You don't have any way to prove that, Buck. So give up that knife and get out of here before I finish you off.
I got it right here, Els.
One of the men holding the engine boy reached under the securing thong of the Nez Perce's loincloth and pulled free a scabbarded Green River Black Iron butcher knife.
Good. Toss it on the table over there.
Ezra Pease grabbed the youngster's hunting shirt in both fists and yanked the bruised and blood-smeared engine upright. Ez spun him and gave the groggy youth a powerful boot to his posterior. Preacher walked over to the young boy, put out his hand to help the boy up.
Blue Heron.
The boy took Preacher's hand and got to his feet.
White Wolf. That man cheats. He lies. He steals from us.
You sure?
I am sure.
For a moment, Preacher looked beyond the shoulder of the young engine and his eyes narrowed to slits. It'll be taken care of.
White Wolf does not lie. I will be satisfied.
Go with the wind, Blue Heron.
Find sleep in a warm lodge, White Wolf. Oh, and come visit us again. My sister misses you awfully.
As Preacher walked away, Ezra Pease moved quickly to intercept him.
What did that thieving Holland nose say to you?
Preacher gave him a cool, appraising gaze. Nothing that's any of your business, feller.
By God, it is my business.
Nope, not by half. But I can make your business a whole lot of mine. Ez glowered as he studied the young man before him. Lean-hipped and raw-hide tough, Ez could see this stranger had tremendous power in his upper body. Something about the casual way he wore those .250-caliber pistols in his sash warned Ez that this stranger could be panther quick and deadly accurate with them guns. That, most of all, gave him pause.
I don't have the time to waste on you.
Jim Bridger and several others swarmed around Preacher in the next instant.
Come on, you son of a bitch! Let's drink! Meet us by the fire! We got some catching up to do!
Sounds good, Jim. I'll be there shortly. The Preacher didn't make it to the mountain man's camp. He spent the rest of the day asking questions about the new trader, Ez, and sharing jokes. First off, he got a last name for the surly man, Pease. Coupled with what he had witnessed, Preacher soon developed an image of the man far from pleased him. But as Pease had done nothing directly to Preacher, the Preacher, like most of his fellow trappers, strongly believed that a man tended his own trap line. As a result, Preacher decided to leave well enough alone. But if the shadow of Pease ever fell across his path, Preacher would be more than happy to do something about it. The opportunity came sooner than Preacher expected. Around noon, he and Bigfoot Joe got into an eating contest. The man who could consume just more than half of the small lumps of forced meat, onions, and wild rice in a chain of pit-roasted intestine, in this case from an elk, was the winner. He split half of the gold pelts or other items bet on the outcome. The Preacher's strong, youthful teeth gave him an advantage, which put him well on the way to the midpoint in the chain.
Look out! Hellfire! Just when I had this thing won.
Preacher had no doubt to the source of the disturbance or who had fired his weapon. He set out at a trot for the gathering crowd of men and haze of dust that rose in the still air of the valley. Several men gave way when they saw the hard expression on the face of Preacher. He approached the center of the dispute. A mountain man lay writhing on the ground, shot through the meaty place above one hip bone. Two others held on to the trader, Ezra Pease, who still waved a smoking pistol in one hand.
Liver-eating Davis caught that there Pease fella selling a gun to an engine.
That's nobody's business what I sell or who I sell it to.
It is in this neck of the woods, you stupid son of a bitch. Preacher had already accumulated a considerable reputation, enough so that when he stepped forward, the others listened to what he had to say about the situation.
Pease, you've outlived your welcome at this rendezvous. Hell, and all the big empty for that matter. I reckon all these fellas here will go along with me when I say we want you out of camp before nightfall.
You're not even dry behind the ears yet. Who are you to tell me that?
I'm the man who's an inch from slitting your gizzard. Pease cut his eyes to the men holding him.
Turn me loose. I'll show this whippersnapper the error of his ways.
Knowing grins pass between his captors.
Oh, we'd be mighty pleased if you did.
Yellowstone Frank Parks, a close friend of Preacher's, released the arm he held.
All right, Preacher. Get ready for the ass-kicking of your life.
Preacher followed up with a looping left to the side of Pease's head. Dimly, Pease saw an opening and drove the muzzle of his empty pistol into Preacher's exposed belly. Preacher raised both arms to block the attack he expected to come at his head. He had reckoned right. Still grasping the pistol, Pease slashed downward, intent on breaking Preacher's wrist. Preacher hardly felt it. Without pause, he raised a knee between the wide-spread legs of Pease and rammed it solidly into the chief's left thigh. That brought Pease to his knees. He dropped the empty pistol and groped for another. Preacher kicked him in the face. Pease flopped over backward. The Preacher was on him in a flash. Somehow, Pease managed to work himself back to his feet. He lunged forward and wrapped his arms around Preacher's waist, trying to take Preacher off his feet. Preacher clasped both hands together and brought him down hard on Pease's left kidney. Pease attempted to regain his feet.
Oh, your mama should have taught you when to stay.
Preacher had landed the kick square to the side of Pease's head. Pease wouldn't be waking up for quite a while. Preacher stumbled away to wash off the blood, slobber, and dirt that clung to him, oblivious of the man he had defeated. Behind him, the other mountain men gathered up the stock and trade Pease had brought with him, loaded his wagons, and provided an escort out of the valley.
And now the son of a bitch is back.
Preacher shook off the dark recollection as he topped the crest of a low saddle. Suddenly, he found himself facing four hard, coppery faces, topped by black braided hair with eagle feathers slanted downward from the back past the left ear. Preacher also noted that the four Injuns held their bows casually, low over their saddle pads, and that the arrows had already been knocked. Preacher's hand automatically dropped to the smooth butt grip of one four-barrel pistol at sight of the warriors. Then he recognized the older man in the middle. Talks to Clouds was an old friend. A fleeting smile curled the Nez Perce's full lips.
Ghost Wolf, I am pleased to see you.
And I you. It's been a long time.
Too long for friends who have shared meat and salt.
Preacher studied the men with Talks to Clouds. They were not painted for war, and they appeared well enough at ease.
What brings you so far from your Green Valley?
We trade horses with the Dakota. My son, Blue Heron, remembers you. I heard of what you did. An old man is grateful.
Well, you're not an old man.
I am if I must rely on others to protect my own.
After a pause, Talks to Clouds gestured behind him.
Come, young Joseph is watching our spotted ponies. Only he is not so young anymore. He is a father. A boy named Inmatu Yalatlat was born to him this past winter. Already he is being called young Joseph. We will eat, drink coffee, talk of the time since we last saw one another.
It would be my pleasure.
The Nez Perce had located their camp over the next rise. The camp's appearance completely relaxed Preacher's innate caution. Women and children accompanied the group of half a dozen warriors and their sub-chief, Talks to Clouds. Preacher and Talks to Clouds walked to the fire in the center of the camp. Women had completed preparations and served up a meal of thick, rich venison stew, fry bread, and cattail slips. Preacher made a generous offer of salt, coffee, and sugar that complemented the feast to the satisfaction of all. When everything was in readiness, the men filled their bowls and settled in to enjoy.
How are things between here and your valley?
Peaceful, except for the Blackfoot. There is much green showing, and it will be a fat spring. That should keep peace.
Is there anything that would cause you to say the Blackfoot are more troublesome than usual?
Yes, White Wolf. They are already making for war. They have many guns provided by white men in trade for pelts and horses. It is not a good thing. The word on the wind is that the Northern Cheyenne are also fixing to make war medicine when spring opens up a little more.
Preacher thought that was strange. Although known as fierce fighters and highly territorial, most skirmishes with the Cheyenne in the past had been between small bands of warriors and some enemy tribe to settle a score or to raid for horses. That, or in reaction to what appeared to be an avalanche of whites pressing westward.
The Cheyenne will be making war on the Blackfoot. That is certain. They must do so to protect the western villages. It is said they know of the white men arming the Blackfoot.
It looks bad, then.
Yes. We may spend the summer in trading with the Dakota and even the Omaha. Let the fighting wear itself out, and then we can go home with our robes.
Will they come south?
I think so. One or the other.
I'd be sorry to see that.
So would I. Yet, we must accept what we get.
Preacher ruminated on all he had heard throughout the evening. And the night's chill reminded him. He broke out his bedroll and settled down for the night. When morning came, he would head on toward Trout Creek Pass. Preacher left for the trading post before daylight. Talks to Cloud stood silently in the open door flap of his lodge and waved a dimly seen salute to his friend. Preacher rode with the warmth of that friendship. He also rode with the awareness of the return of Ezra Pease, constantly on the lookout for any more low-grade trash who might be working for Pease. He kept well below the ridge lines and frequently circled on his back trail. Ezra Pease removed the floppy felt hat from his head and ran a hand over the balding dome with its fringe of carroty hair.
There it is, gentlemen. Just like those wandering Indians told us. Black Hands Village. I suppose they've had time to hear about the Blackfoot. They should be glad to see us.
We break out the whiskey first, huh, boss?
Ezra looked at the not-too-bright thug named Bartholomew Haskell. He could only shake his head.
Liquor up the bucks real good, huh?
Ezra had to admit that this new batch of henchmen was about 3 wheels short of a wagon. In truth, Ezra had to admit a lot. Times had not been good for him. His fortunes had plummeted. After his expulsion from these mountains some 10 years past, Pease had wandered his way back to St. Louis. Down on his luck, he'd been forced to lower himself to the basest of scams. For half a year, he rolled drunks for whatever they had on their bodies. He'd nearly been caught by the law several times, and he did once get caught by a riverboat man who appeared a whole lot drunker than he turned out to be. The brawny riverboater thoroughly and soundly beat the living hell out of Pease. He'd done a job to rival that handed out by Preacher himself. Ezra Pease lay in a bed for 3 weeks recovering, and thought of both those shaming incidents all the while. When he could once again face his fellow man on the streets of St. Louis, he visited a dockside swill house that he had frequented when first in town. There he bought whiskey and many beers for furtive men who glanced nervously over their shoulders at the doorway. They drank his whiskey and chased him with beer and nodded in silent agreement. After 3 days of this, Ezra Pease and his gathering of bully boys set out one night to find a certain loudmouth rafter. They located him all right. What resulted was that Ezra once again got the torn turkey crap stomped out of him. He wound up in the hospital this time. When he regained consciousness, he learned the identity of his assailant, Mike Fink. Meanwhile, he had to recover from his broken bones, mashed face, one chewed ear, and an eye that no longer saw clearly. Mike Fink had missed by only a fraction of an inch from gouging the orb from its socket. While he mended, Pease went about rebuilding his minute criminal empire. He left the infirmary with 7 men solidly behind him. He drifted into Illinois and tried stagecoach robberies. 3 of them died in the process. Survivors did 5 to 9 years in prison. Ezra Pease proved to be a model prisoner. He was released after only 4 years and 7 months for good behavior. He thanked the warden with almost fawning gratitude and immediately set out to organize a new, better, and definitely stronger gang. At last, it seemed, his fortunes had taken a turn for the better. Ezra Pease met Titus Vickers inside prison. And when the opportunity presented itself, Pease broke Vickers free from the chain gang on which he labored in a granite quarry in southeastern Illinois. Together, he attracted a dozen hard men who knew how to fight with tooth, nail, knife, and gun. Some scattered successes drew more of those disinclined to exert any honest effort or sweat to earn a living. Before long, Pease had 30 heavily armed, morally bankrupt representatives of the worst dregs of border trash, scofflaws, backshooters, rapists, and sadists ever assembled in one place at any one time. It offered a splendid promise for the future. They spilled over into Missouri. Pickings were slim there. There was vast wealth just waiting for the picking out beyond the prairie. Even though the fur trade had all but dried up, enormous fortune waited for an enterprising man eager enough to seize it. Ezra and Titus conferred with a shadowy group from New York and announced to their men that they would outfit an expedition to the far-off Shining Mountains. Buffalo robes and hides were beginning to bring high prices back east. These could be traded for if one had the right things to offer the Indians. And Ezra knew what they wanted: guns, powder, shot, and whiskey. Ezra Pease jerked himself out of his reverie. He blinked and refocused his eyes on the thin smoke trails rising from cook fires before the Cheyenne red-topped lodges.
We'll go down now and get all we can get.
Black Hand knew of the white men long before they came into view on the downslope toward the camp. He had known of them for 3 days. That would have surprised Ezra Pease. He had not seen any sign of Injuns since leaving the last Blackfoot village, where they had traded munitions for high-quality beadwork buckskins, bearskin robes, and other items. Often, those who lived in ignorance of the presence of Injuns didn't live that long. But the day would prove to be mildly successful for Ezra Pease and his worthless followers. Black Hand had heard of the rifles, powder, shot, and bar lead these men brought with them. He badly wanted them, along with bullet molds and replacement ramrods for the older weapons in the Cheyenne camp. So he made ready to welcome the white men. To do that, he paid them the infrequent compliment of meeting them at the edge of the village instead of waiting in his lodge until they made their presence known. Behind him ranged a dozen warriors, one for each of the whites, weapons to hand but not held at the ready. A ring of women, children, and camp dogs formed behind him. The one who looked to be the white's leader reined up in front of Black Hand and made the universal sign for peace.
I am called Pease.
I am Black Hand.
Good. We've come to trade.
What do you have to trade with us?
Grinning, Pease turned in the saddle and gestured to one of the heavily laden pack horses.
Well, now, I was just getting ready to show you. I think your bucks are gonna like what we have.
Come in among our lodges, then. We will eat, smoke, then make trade.
Very generous of you, Chief, but we don't have the time. We need to be pushing on. We'll just break out our goods right here.
No, too close to the ponies.
Pease gave in with a shrug and led the way behind the chief to the center of the village. All considered, the white men received a warm welcome. Black Hand gave in to their time concerns by offering the bare minimum of food. Quantity any decent Cheyenne would have considered insultingly small.
All right, boys, go ahead and unload them.
Black Hand's eyes narrowed when he recognized the double X marking on the barrels taken from the gray horse. For all he wanted the rifles, he had no use whatsoever of the spirit-stealing water. Even so, convention required him to wait, with mounting anger, while the men unloaded all the trade goods.
You may stay in trade, but the headache water must go.
Well, I don't see any reason for that. Never trust a man who won't take a drink, my father always said. It won't do any harm. Come, Chief. I'll fill you the first cup.
Take it out of my village.
The stance of the surrounding warriors changed subtly. Pease noted that they apparently shared their chief's dislike of liquor. There was about 25 of them, all armed. Although only a few had pistols or old trade muskets, Pease knew that a good man could get off 6 arrows in the time it took to recharge a rifle or pistol. At this range, it would be a slaughter.
Certainly. Anything you say, Chief. You boys put that whiskey back on the pack saddle immediately.
2 hours went by haggling over the rifles. Shrewd barterers, the Cheyenne gave precious little of value and wound up with good weapons to boot. All in all, Ezra Pease considered they had gotten the better of the deal in that they had gotten out of the camp with scouts in place. From the top of the ridge, he looked back on the village.
We'll be returning to this place.
Three of the scruffiest, louse-infested louts Preacher had ever seen in the Big Empty hunkered down around a hastily constructed ring of stones at the bottom of the slope. They warmed their hands over the coals that roasted hunks of fresh-killed venison and slopped down coffee from steaming tin cups. He took that in with his first glance. Then his eyes narrowed, and his lips turned down as he viewed the rest of the scene. A trio of men lay sprawled in death, two of them clearly backshot. A fourth, whom Preacher recognized at once, lay with his back against an aspen sapling, several turns of rope binding him in place. He had also been shot, although in the leg. Preacher named the captive as he studied the grayed face behind a brush of beard.
John Luscombe. That'd make the others Quail Egg Walker, Trent Luddy, and Possum Smith.
Preacher knew the four had been partnered up for a number of years, trying to make up for low prices with volume. They had also scouted for a couple of the wagon trains making the westward push, shot meat for the soldier boys, and done other of the odd jobs available to men who preferred to live the solitary free life of the high lonesome. One of the many things no mountain man could abide was treachery, and the ruined campsite showed no indication of a prolonged struggle.
Them three piles of buzzard puke must have come on friendly, gotten in amongst Luscombe and the others, and then done their foul deed. Thunder, seems to me like a little lesson in right and wrong is needed.
Preacher withdrew from the screening line of pines and walked Thunder down in the clear. He was about 100 yards away from the camp.
Hello, the camp!
Preacher saw the three men eye him suspiciously and then nod to one another. After all, it was only one man. They could easily jump him, rob him, and kill him once his suspicions cooled down.
Hello, friend. Come on in.
Looks like you had some ruckus.
That we did, friend.
The man was a gap-toothed brute with a brow so low it left no room to hang a hat on his forehead.
This bunch of drifting trash came up on us and tried to give us what for. We took care of them, though, didn't we, boys?
Sure enough, that's what we did, all right.
The sawed-off, shallow-faced punk with dirty yellow hair could barely hide his wry smile.
Well, I don't reckon anyone will miss him.
No, not likely. It's getting so a man don't know who to trust out here anymore.
Yeah, I'd say that's mighty keen figuring.
Preacher cut his eyes to Luscombe, tied to the tree.
What do you figure ought to be done now, John?
Kill them all, Preacher.
Preacher, bitch!
They were so shocked that every one of them forgot to draw iron. The Preacher did. The shallow-faced scumbag stood trembling. In a matter of seconds, the odds had soured considerably.
Flat irritates me when I come across four men I count as friends. One shot up, and the others murdered in cold blood by snake shit like you three.
I didn't have anything to do with it.
You don't lie any better than these other assholes. Now, you gonna use one of those pistols you're toting, or do you want to settle it another way?
Like what?
There's always knives. How about warhawks? I'm sure John would lend you his.
I won't do nothing like this never again. I swear.
Yeah, I know you won't.
Preacher walked over to the aspen. He bent low and cut John Luscombe free. Luscombe remained in place, flexing his wrists and rubbing them to revive circulation.
Yeah. You done good, Preacher.
I'm sorry it didn't happen along sooner. Might have saved your partners.
Preacher knelt down beside Luscombe and cut away the buckskin trouser leg to reveal the wound.
We all got our time to be called.
Yeah, though it don't seem fitting to be at the hands of maggoty trash like these. Look, I got some who shot John. Take a few knocks and hang on.
I'll wait till it's over.
Preacher nodded, then probed the through-and-through hole with a peeled willow stick.
Oh, sweet baby!
Maul, quit your complaining. Went plumb through.
Good. Didn't hit no bleeder either. I'd be a goner by now.
Where are you heading, John?
With this bullet through my leg, I reckon I'll mosey up toward the trading post.
Preacher began to bandage Luscombe's wound.
Well, I'm for Trout Creek Pass myself. Come morning, we can go in together.
Mighty nice of you, Preacher. I'll be obliged.
No, you won't. Here, have some of this. You ain't obliged, not after giving me the prime opportunity to rid the earth of some of its filth. Can you do for some eats and coffee while I cut saplings and tend my horse flesh?
Sure enough, if they didn't eat it all.
Well, I can see to that too if needs be.
Preacher headed to pick it out and unsaddle Thunder and the pack horse. First, though, he saw to reloading his pistol. Never could tell what else might happen by. Ezra P. sat on a folding camp stool and glowered into the embers of the fire in front of his great canvas tent. The more he thought of the loss of high-quality rifles and plenty of powder lead and moles to those stinking savages, the madder he got.
Vi, come here.
Titus Vickers, the second-in-command, walked up. Worry lines furrowed his brow. It gave his gaunt face more of a human aspect, rather than the likeness of a skull, which was its usual appearance.
It's likely to be another 3 or 4 days before Ham and the boys get back from the pass. I want to round up everyone in camp at first light tomorrow. We're going to go back and teach those savages a lesson.
You think that's wise, Ez?
I think it's necessary, which counts for more. You've seen how the men go around all hangdog. Give them a little blood, and they'll snap right out of it.
Preacher and Luscombe had just made the summit of Trout Creek Pass. They were a little ways off from the trading post, but already they could hear the pilgrims making enough noise to raise the damn dead.
Can you hear that carrying on?
Sounds like a pass of more of them brain-numb pilgrims.
Exactly. Now what a tarnation could have brought them clear up here? Ain't no clear trail to the Oregon Trail this away.
No accounting for pilgrims' winds, Preacher. Say, you got a bit more of that hooflung chuck? My leg's giving me a mite of a twinge.
Well, swill down your fill, John. We'll be resupplying right soon. When I think all them East Coast idiots swarming out here, ruining our clean, purty-smelling country, I just want to bawl. I do. I don't set it in a minute, too. Makes a feller sick to see it all happen.
Won't argue with you. First thing you know, they'll be putting them iron rails out here with those steam cars running on them.
Yeah, seems likely.
Luscombe offered the jug back to Preacher.
Best you take a little, too, to keep off the chill.
Thanks. Well, shit. A little is all there was, John. This thing got a hole in it.
Oh, it sure does. Right up there at the top. For which I am eternally grateful.
Preacher took in all the activity of the pilgrims swarming around like ants, not giving a care to the rest of the world.
Damn, look at them. Their only worry is where's the next place to plant their asses. Goddamn pilgrims.
The big burly man in the doorway to the trading post noticed Preacher's approach.
Great googly moogly, it's Preacher. How do you winter out in that place?
Well, I done just fine, Walt.
Walt Hayward saw the bundle on one of the horses.
Who you got there, old slumped over?
John Luscombe. He ran afoul of some cowardly trash. He'll be all right. He's just drunk right now.
Hayward bustled over to the horse. His belly swelled out as far as his barrel chest, but consisted of a slab of solid muscle.
We'll have to get you in a good bed for a while.
I'd rather it were a lean-to, if you don't mind, Walt.
Good. He can recognize folks he's seen before.
Well, hell, Walt, he's shot in the leg, not in the head.
I'll get Lone Deer to fix up one of those little cabins we built last fall. Now, come on, Preacher. I got something important to talk to you about.
I'd favor a drink of your good rye first, Walt. I'm right on the edge of being parched.
Fair enough. Come on in.
Thank you.
What we got here is somewhat of a problem. I'm sure you saw the pilgrims out there. They wintered at Bent's, and now they're up here all full of piss and vinegar. Well, they're real pilgrims, if you catch my drift. It's a flock of missionaries on their way to bring the word to the heathen Injuns.
That's a damn fool notion if I ever heard one.
Sure it is. At least if they're left on their own. What they need is someone with experience to see them through to wherever they want to settle.
No, sir. Not this child. I had all I want of gospel shouters and Bible thumpers. You of all people ought to know that, Walt.
Oh, I know you've had your encounters with the type, but...
But nothing! The thought of any of these pilgrims and tenderfeet going west plain sours my stomach. You got yourself the wrong boy this time, Walt, because I plumb ain't gonna do it.
My. I always knew you was yellow clear through, preacher. Lazy, shiftless, no-account Injun lover who hates every white man on God's green earth.
The speaker turned from his hunched-shouldered stance at the plank bar. Preacher recognized him at once. Bull Ransom, a failed trapper who hung around in the high lonesome doing odd jobs from time to time and stealing what he wanted the rest.
Where I come from, we never stack bullshit that high, Ransom.
You calling me bullshit, preacher?
Preacher cut his eyes around the nearly empty saloon portion of the trading post.
Well, now, seeing as how there's nobody else here but me and Walt, yeah, I'd say you're nothing but a great big oversized pile of shit.
Stop with that smart-aleck mouth of yours. I'll fix you good. I can take you, you know that, preacher? I can shoot you where you sit before you touch a gun. I could slice your lily-livered throat with my green river, or I might turn your face into ground dog meat with my bare hands.
Good God, Ransom. Either you're stupid enough to believe that, or you're the worst bald-faced liar I ever met, Bull.
That tipped the scales for Bull Ransom.
So, at what point exactly are you going to start kicking my ass?
Ransom's nose was nothing more than bloody gristle smack dab in his already ugly face. He stumbled to his feet, grabbing an empty whiskey bottle on the way up.
Die, you bastard!
Preacher easily ducked Ransom's swing. Ransom stumbled backward, hitting the bar.
I'm gonna stick you like the pig you are.
Oh, now enough's enough, goddammit.
In a flash, Preacher snatched the wrist and upper arm of Bull Ransom and swung down hard. At the same time, he shot his right leg upward, the top of his thigh forming a hard crossbar. Both bones of Ransom's forearm snapped. Ransom went down to his knees. Preacher turned back to Walt Hayward.
Well, let me get another bottle and we'll wet our whistles some more.
Walt started across the floor to the bar when he noticed weak, furtive movement from the fallen Ransom. Almost before it could register, Walt watched the battered trash come to his feet, a long, sharp Green River knife in his left hand.
Preacher, look out, he's got a knife!
I reckon you are, Bull. You better make your peace with God.
Damn him and damn you too, preacher.
Yeah, I heard that before.
I hate you, preacher.
Preacher cut his eyes to the doorway and saw three women overdressed in the current Eastern style. One, her gray hair protruding from the fringe of a bonnet, had a hand to her mouth, her face all pale and waxing. She appeared about ready to swoon. With her other hand, she clung to the arm of another lady about her own age, and the third had uttered the scream. She was much younger, and she was kind of pretty, too. At least until she screwed her smooth-complexioned face into a mask of moral outrage.
You barbarian! You savage brute! Why, you... You murdered that poor man for no earthly reason.
Yeah, I consider him trying to knife me in the back more than enough reason, ma'am.
Where's the law around here? This cold-blooded killer must be arrested.
If by that you mean an honest, God-fearing man who rights wrongs, I'd have to say it's Preacher, Miss Cora.
Preacher? You mean you have a minister nearby, Mr. Hayward?
Nope. Preacher's been called a lot of things, but a minister ain't one of them. He's the one that just done the killing.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Spare us from the madness of this wilderness.
The best way for him to have done that is to have seen that you stayed where you belonged.
Oh, I'm not finished with you. You must be judged for the awful thing you did.
Oh, well now, I figure as how that's all taken care of. I already asked the man above to weigh the soul of the departed bull ransom and decide where best to put it, and not to look too harshly on my having to send him off so unexpected-like.
Are you making light of my concerns, sir?
I wouldn't say that, miss. You're way too pretty to be made light of.
Preacher, I reckon as how you'll have to act as guide now, seeing as how you've just done in the mission folks' wagon master, that is.
No, absolutely not. Why, the very idea of allowing this monster in the company of gentle souls and God-loving people like our family of missionaries is out of the question.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Really, it's the best solution. There's no one who knows these parts better than Preacher, Miss Cara.
But he just killed a man right before our eyes.
Yes, ma'am. And considering conditions out here, it's likely he'll do it again if the situation calls for it.
I will not permit it. I would stand between this wretched beast and his intended victim and defy him to shoot me first.
That's all fuss and feathers, miss, if you don't mind my saying so. There's wild Injuns, renegade whites, border trash, and all sorts out there. Bunches of them deserve killing. They wouldn't be kind to you. And once they'd had their way, they'd like to kill you for good measure.
I don't believe you.
Well, suit yourself. But it don't cut no jerky strips nohow, because I ain't going to take you folks anywhere.
Fine. No, that's not fine. We simply have to reach our mission site in time to build lodgings and a meeting house. We have to plant crops and care for our livestock. And that lout didn't impress me with his ability to carry out his duties. We need someone reliable.
Well, to cut to the chase, the more Cora went on, the more beguiled Preacher became. She had plenty more to say, and she did it at great length. Preacher gave back just as good, but the gal's passion at their goal was just making her more attractive in Preacher's eyes. Finally, Preacher got mush-headed enough to ask the key question.
And just whereabouts are you headed, miss?
We are going to bring the word of God to the heathen Cheyenne up north of here.
A portly man, done up all in black, complete with dickey and Roman collar, pushed through the Hudson's Bay blanket that served as a divider between the saloon and the trading sides. He walked toward Preacher.
Oh, no. No, you're not. There's war talk flying around the Cheyenne lodges. From what I hear, they're fixing to take the war trail against their old enemies, the Blackfoot. That means someone's going to get their hair lifted. I'd be one miserable guide if I was to take you into that. And besides, I ain't eager to get my scalp picked off by any Injun, Cheyenne, or Blackfoot.
We have no fear, sir. We have the protection of God who sent us to the Cheyenne.
Oh, well, now, isn't that right comforting? Must let a feller laid down to sleep with an easy mind. Look, pardon me being so pushy, but I ain't never met a man on such close personal terms with the Almighty before this. Might I know your name?
I am the Reverend Thornton Bookworthy, sir. It is my privilege to serve the United Mission Conference to the heathen.
Bookworthy? Well, Reverend Bookworthy, the heathen are fixing to make war this whole summer.
You astound me, sir. Surely a man of such prowess with fist and gun can have no fear of any mere ignorant savages.
Now that's where you miss the point entirely, Reverend. From personal experience, I'll allow us how those ignorant savages, as you put it, are every bit as smart as you and me. And they don't want your God. They ain't got no need for him.
Oh, Preacher, you give remarkable insight into the Indians to those of us who are woefully ignorant of their ways. But our dilemma remains the same. Even if we were to go back where we came from...
Now you're talking!
Even if we were, we could not get there without a guide. We would, in fact, be stranded here at this remote place, forced to spend another dreary winter.
I thought you wintered at Bent's Fort.
They did. I come in a week ago. Lost their guide on the way up from Bent's Fort. Hired Bull Ransom first thing he showed up after the thaw in mid-March. Then you killed him.
Preacher eyed the Reverend Bookworthy.
You could have hired any one of the woolly backs hereabouts and done better for it.
They were in a hurry. I told them it was a mistake.
I reckon I could take you as far down as Bent's Fort. From there, you can find an escort back east.
I must protest. We've been directed by God to carry salvation to the savages. Nothing, nothing can turn us from our course.
God didn't direct you to get these lovely ladies killed now, did he? Listen close, Mr. Reverend Bookworthy. You'd be smart to take what you've been offered and be grateful for it. I've got no time for more of your insisting, and I just might change my mind if you keep the jabber up.
Running Bear, Stone Drum, Wind Rider, and Fallen Horse stood in the midst of the charred lodge poles and ashes that had been the village of Black Hand. They found the body of their fellow chief, along with four warriors, where they had fallen. Behind their corpses lay a mound of dead women and children whom they had been protecting. The ruins of the village, in its once beautiful, peaceful valley, sweltered under the stench of so much death.
It was white men, Fallen Horse. I'm certain of it. Who else would waste the food and burn the lodges?
I agree, Running Bear.
It might have been the Absarica. Those crow dogs have rubbed up against the whites so long that they even think like them. We must gather a large war party and send it against our old enemy.
And have the Blackfoot at our backs?
What do you know about it, Windrider?
I know that the Blackfoot have been buying guns from some white men, that they have many of the latest kind. I know, too, that these white traders had visited Black Hand's village.
Too much talk about whites. I say we take the war trail against all whites. Run them out. They have no reason to be here. They kill the game and leave most to waste, or run it off. They foul the ground with their waste, muddy the water, and cut deep gashes in the breast of Earth Mother. It is for us to stop their coming.
You would stop the flow of the great water to the east? The whites number like the drops of that mighty river. These are different days. We must learn to be tolerant of our enemies, the Crow and the whites.
All three of Wind Rider's companions looked at him as though he had confessed some unspeakable vice.
That is not for us to decide. We must take this to the Grand Council and gain agreement of a plan that will work.
Arapaho Basin had long been a gathering place for the Indians who roamed the fringes of the Rocky Mountains. The hot sulfur springs that bubbled up from the depths of the earth were considered good for the bones of the old. The current occupants of the basin had little consideration for that. Ezra Pease had established his base camp there because of the shelter provided by the high peaks that surrounded the lush valley. He was taking his ease outside his tent, sipping on his fifth cup of coffee, laced with rum, when two of his disreputable gang rode into camp.
Mr. Pease, Weasel Carter and those men you sent in to do in Preacher, he killed them all.
Ezra Pease came to his boots.
What? I sent Weasel because not even Preacher could figure out that he was a danger until it was too late.
Well, Preacher sure learned pretty fast.
Damn it! Our whole operation hinges on getting rid of him. Preacher is all too friendly with most of the Indians. And he's known by every white man in this country. If he gets word of what we're up to, he can make the world an extremely mean place for us.
What should we do about it?
Get the job done right. Get Bart Haskell, Two Thumbs Bueller, and about 10 more over here right now.
When the reluctant volunteers assembled, Ezra Pease eyed them coldly, then reminded himself that, well, these were the best he could get. Hell, at least they were loyal to him.
I can see by the looks on your faces that you know what happened to Weasel and the men with him. I never said Preacher was going to be easy to stop. He's smart, mean, and knows these mountains better than any living man. He'll be wary now, and a whole lot harder to run to ground. That's why I'm sending a dozen of you. Preacher is a legend, out here as well as in those penny dreadfuls you may have seen back east. It's going to be your job to track him down and finish him. But I don't simply want him dead. I want him dragged around from place to place so folks know for certain sure that he's a goner. With him out of the way, our path is clear to fortune and power. Provision yourselves and ride out within the hour. The sooner you go, the sooner Preacher dies.
Preacher is slouched in the saddle of his spotted horse, Thunder, the crest of the notch that led south out of Trout Creek Pass. He looked at the wagon train that rolled slowly past.
You all keep moving. I'll catch up and scout ahead in a while.
Complaints still came from the missionaries about being turned back. Preacher noted that most of the women accepted it with relief. That was evident in the less pinched expressions they wore. But not all of them, Preacher reminded himself as he gazed on the ash-blonde hair that escaped in wisps around the bonnet on the head of Cora Ames. Preacher mentally reviewed for the 100th time the trail south and eastward to Bent's Fort. It'd be rough, but these pilgrims had been over it once. Maybe they'd learned something. At least the fort was out on the flats, and these folks would have easy going from there. They could take the Santa Fe Trail as far as Independence, for that matter, and then on down to St. Louis. They'd have to look out for the Southern Cheyenne, the Kiowa, Pawnee, Kaw, and the Osage, which was no mean feat. But with the right men to guide them, it could be done. It was done day in and day out, for that matter. In a short time, Preacher caught up with the wagon that carried Cora Ames.
I suppose you know we're terribly curious, Mr. Preacher.
Curious about what?
Surely you have a Christian name, unless, like some of those scallywags at the trading post tried to get us to believe you were mothered by a she-wolf.
Well, yeah, Miss Cora, I do. The given name's Arthur.
Well, that's a perfectly lovely name, Arthur.
That's probably why I don't cotton much to use it.
I would think your mother would be disappointed you did not. Where were you born, Arthur?
Please, just Preacher. On a farm in Ohio, long enough ago that it was a frontier at the time. Sauk and fox were still all over the place.
Do you have living kin, brothers or sisters?
I do. Look, if you don't mind, it's downright uncomfortable talking so much about myself. I don't think me bold, but what about you? What sort of life has brought you out into all this emptiness?
My family are all Green Mountain folks from Vermont. I am the fifth of seven children my mother bore. In addition to dairy cattle and harvesting maple syrup, my father was a circuit-riding preacher.
Then your family all grew up God-fearing and full of rectitude?
Not all of them. But that's another story. I don't mean to offend, but I've noticed that you don't talk like an uncouth, unlettered dolt all the time. You seem to pick and choose.
Well, you're not the first to make that observation. I'd acquired some 6 years of book learning before I made tracks for the Shining Mountains. After that, it was mostly self-taught, but I did learn some proper grammar. Some of the men I associated with helped me on that.
How was that? No, please, I really am interested.
Well, a number of years back, I don't remember exactly when, some of us who could read and write and do our sums took to sharing our knowledge amongst ourselves and those who couldn't read for themselves. I even learned some Shakespeare and all about the heroes of long ago. Horatio and Odysseus and Julius Caesar.
Oh, I'm so glad you called him by his proper name. Ever since those terrible translations of the Iliad and the Odyssey, people have taken to calling him Ulysses.
Well, thank you. You're a learned woman then, huh?
My, yes. More, I'm sure, than a lot of people think I should be. Most girls back east still finish school with the eighth form. Then it's off to a home and children, or to one of the sweatshops to labor until death.
Don't reckon a sprightly filly... A spirited lady like you would be content with either of those.
A few go on to the young lady's seminary. That's where I matriculated. I'd not turn down a husband, family, and a stout home. As for the alternative, it is, as they say, a man's world. They have all the positions on the top of the heap. For a woman who undertakes to support herself or her family, the workplace offers little more than it does for slaves down in the South. Drudgery and dehumanization are the watchword for the few factories and sewing shops, or even teaching positions open to women in the East.
But you chose missionary work. What influenced that decision? Cora flushed and diverted her cobalt gaze from Preacher's slate eyes.
As you said, there are some things I am downright uncomfortable talking about.
Oh, sorry I brought it up. Well, I'd best get along up the string and see what's ahead. We'll be making camp in about 2 hours.
So early? There are still hours of daylight.
First day on the trail. There'll be a need to fix what's broke and shake down the way the wagons are loaded. It all takes time. Good day to you, Miss Cora.
Preacher rode off along the line of wagons. Behind him, he left Cora Ames with a vague sense of being unfulfilled. Later, cook fires were lighted and the pilgrims settled in. Three wagons needed to replace wheels with loose iron tires. Preacher sat by the fire and watched some men set out to fix the wheels. Lydia Pettibone bent over a tripod that held a bubbling pot of stew.
Will you take supper with us, Preacher?
Well, don't mind if I do. I do want to make a round of the camp first, though, if that's not making it too late for you folks.
Not at all. It'll be a while.
Preacher went on his rounds, inspecting the fringes of the camp. He didn't expect any hostiles to swarm down on him, not so close to the trading post in Trout Creek Pass, nor had he seen any sign throughout the day of any drifting bands of white trash. Yet an uneasiness gnawed at him. When Preacher returned to the Pettibone wagons, the aromas rising from the cook fire made his belly growly as a grizzly on the first day after hibernation. His mouth watered when his nose made out the distinct scent of apple pie.
God and these folks may have a few advantages after all.
Over a week's time, Preacher learned a lot more about the gospel shouters, enough indeed to make him uncomfortable. Some, he knew, would join this crazy expedition as a last chance opportunity. They considered themselves to be losers, and they talked and acted like it, too. Hell, they wouldn't last a year out here. Some would go around the bend, wander off, and get killed by any number of roving predators, human as well as animal. That would be their problem. Others, like the Bookworthies, well, they had the wild fire of the zealot in their eyes. They could be trouble.
Good thing they're all going back, if they get there.